Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, yeah. Goodbye, Mr. Chips. 1939. I guess there's been more than one version of this, but the 1939 is what we're looking at.
Yeah.
And what a terrific movie it is. But yeah, looking up here, we've got Robert Donat.
That's how I say it.
Okay. Yeah. He's the main character, Mr. Chips. Mm-hmm. And Greer Garson is in it.
Mm-hmm. And this was her first movie.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
She was very fine looking, and everybody in the movie thought so.
Oh, yeah. Well, she was. And if you've ever seen Mrs. Miniver, she was Mrs. Miniver.
Right.
And in that movie, she's positively just drop dead gorgeous, I think.
Wow. Wow. That's great.
So it was interesting to see her in this role.
Yeah.
Young.
Interesting.
There's tons of personality.
Yeah. So there's two directors listed, Sam Wood and Sidney Franklin. So I don't know what the story is there or why there would be two, but there they are. Okay. I didn't know if there was a story there that you might know. So yeah. So what leads us to this film?
Well, this film was such a total surprise, and I've mentioned it before, I think, but our family in January of 2023 said, we need to start watching a new series, so to speak. We had done a whole bunch of movies of William Wyler. We'd done his stuff in chronological order. Before that, we'd done Billy Wilder in chronological order. And rather than a director, we said, let's watch the nominated and winning movies from each year of Oscars in order.
Very good.
We may never live long enough to get done. And for a lot of the really more recent ones, like maybe the 60s or 70s and up, we're going to wind up being fairly selective about what we watch. Our criteria were just, we have to watch the winner, even if we've seen it 30 times.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just kind of pick from what's available, because the first one we watched was Cimarron from 1931, and that was the only thing we could find.
Hmm.
And that was the first Oscars. Well, there were silent ones before that, but
okay,
we just said, we'll start here with the talkies. And so, and then we'll look at it, and sometimes we'll cut some movies out, but we try to watch as many as are available that we haven't seen a lot of,
well,
or that we haven't
watched
many times.
Yeah. Love
yeah. It. And so this one was one of the last ones we watched when we were watching the 1940 winners or nominees and winners, because I'd kind of heard of it. It's about a school teacher, and he's kind of shy, and he meets a woman, and it helps him blossom. You know,
yeah.
Sounds sentimental, sounds sappy, sounds boring.
Yeah.
But it was nominated in 1940, and that year is one of those years that I'm sure they've written books about. Gone with the Wind won. But there was also Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Very good.
Ninotchka.
Yeah.
Of Mice and Men, Stagecoach, The Wizard of Oz, Wuthering Heights, which I don't like the story, but this is an amazing production of it.
Wow.
Because I saw that for the William Wilder. And there were a couple others that we'd not heard of. So Dark Victory, Love Affair, and Goodbye, Mr. Chips. So Goodbye, Mr. Chips, we saved to the very end. The only one after it was Of Mice and Men, which disappointed me just like I thought it would. But this one was an unexpected surprise for all of us. We all loved it.
Oh, that's good.
And we were talking about it at dinner when I said, I'm going to do this podcast episode. And Rose said, how did this movie manage to be so gentle and kind of sweet and yet keep my attention the whole time and have things to say that it wasn't pounding you over the head with? I mean, it was just a really well done movie.
It sure was.
So that's why I thought we'd like to talk about it.
Well, that's great. So it's interesting that there were so many nominees in 1940.
They did.
Because
like
I remember for most of my life, there was only five.
Oh. But that's recent. In the early days, they always had like 10.
Okay, and they're back to that now. I think the last several years anyway, seems like they have a long list. So.
And when there were a whole lot of movies being made, like there were back then, it really gave you a wide variety. So you had, you know, Gone with the Wind. Nothing's going to beat Gone with the Wind. Let's just face that now. But Dark Victory was a real tear-jerking drama with Bette Davis. Love Affair is, you know, real romantic movie. I mean, so there are all kinds of movies. You know, Stagecoach, a Western. So it was nice because you'd get Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire at the same time as you'd get some other thing like maybe Grand Hotel, which is big drama that I recommend. Yeah. So anyhow, I liked it that way.
Yeah. I love it. That's got to be a lot of fun. So yeah, so what is Goodbye, Mr. Chips?
So Goodbye, Mr. Chips is also set a lot earlier in time than I thought it was. It starts in the late 1800s. With young Mr. Chips and is probably 25 or so. It's really Mr. Chipping. And he is getting on the train with all the kids who are going to go off to their school. So these are all boys. They're going to this school that's near London. And it's a venerable boys' school with a long history of, you know, distinguished teachers and students, and he's so excited about it. But you can see from the beginning when he's talking to this shy student on the train, he also is shy. And he wants so much to do well, and he's so clueless about a lot of the ways to do it. And we, as I've said in the description of the movie, you'll see it says, and then he goes on a vacation and meets this woman, and it kind of changes him. But not in the way that we're used to in Hollywood movies now. I feel like it's a kind of a quiet transformation. And the whole movie is sweet, but it's sweet in kind of a, well, and wholesome doesn't make it sound any better, but in kind of this wholesome way that you can really relate to. And one of the things they do is Robert Donat, when we got done watching this, I said, we have to look up who won Best Actor, because if it wasn't him, then he was robbed. And sure enough, he did win.
Oh, good.
Because he was 34 or so when the movie was made. He had to play somebody who was from like 24, 25 up to like 83, 84. And he did it all beautifully.
Yeah.
You really believed he was the age he was. And as he does it, you also see how he changes, but it's also kind of a gentle transformation. And yet the history that's being told of what's going on around the school, because this goes on till, I guess, well, it's during World War One or after World War One when the movie ends. So there's a long time period.
Maybe it is a good long time. He was at that school for 60 years or something like that. I'm trying to remember what he said. Yeah,
didn't he come like in 1870 or 1880 and he's there till after World War One is done. And so you see, the funny thing is the school uniform changes, but not that much. I mean, when the kids are getting on the train, they're all wearing their little top hats as part of their school uniform, all that kind of thing. And there's striped school scarf, a la Harry Potter.
And it's fun. You know, now that you mentioned that, I did see that. It was like top hats and then different kinds of hats. It was really what changed. Yeah, love it.
So I don't know how better to describe it. And this is the kind of description that made me always think it would be boring and shy away from it. And nothing could be further from the truth.
But yeah, it was surprisingly good. You know, to me, it's in the same category as It's a Wonderful Life and how it made me feel watching it. It's very life affirming. It's very uplifting. I felt really good at the end, you know. This is good stuff, and well acted, and it was interesting how the movie was put together as well. There was a lot of, you know, scenes like this is from this time period, and then suddenly mm-hmm. you're in another one, but it worked. You know, there was, it wasn't that I was lost. It was somehow did it without much cue, you know, it's just like right. suddenly we're here now. And part of it was how Mr. Chips looked, right? So when, once you yeah. see him walk on frame, you're like, oh, okay, now we're in well, this. You know?
Robert Donna, when he was asked how he could portray these widely varying ages, and he said, well, you know, once I put that mustache on, I just was that character.
Hmm.
Once I looked in the mirror.
Yeah.
So yeah. it was kind of interesting. And that's the older Mr. Mm-hmm. Chipping.
Right.
And one of the things I liked about it that helped give the context, but also conveyed the timelessness of the school and kind of the experience, because there's the other deadly thing for me is coming of age. No, thank you.
Yeah.
But this is kind of Mr. Chipping coming of age. And it's also a lot of the boys that he's teaching. And the way you get to know the boys is generationally, and it's through them going, giving the role as they're coming up to go into the school in the morning. Mm. Someone's standing there and they're in alphabetical order. It's so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so. Well, they used some of the same kids to portray that next generation of kids whose fathers had gone there and sent them.
Yes.
So Collie was a main one. So you saw Collie, and when you saw Collie show up, you're like, oh, it's another generation. Because he said, it's my first day here. And or there was another one who, I can't remember the names of the kids, but one of them, Mr. Chipping at one point goes, your trouser legs are much too short. He goes, wait a minute, is your name? It was like Finch. And he goes, yes, sir. And he goes, oh, the Finches, they always outgrow their trousers. And he would say that, you know, was your father so-and-so? And he went here, oh, yes, sir. That figures, because yeah. he was never on time either. And so it was a way of giving us different examples of how he was changing because he interacted with the boys. But also, as I say, the timelessness of the school.
Right.
Generation after generation was going there.
Yeah. And he said at one time during a speech, he said, you know, if I ever see you in life, I'm not going to, I may not remember you, right? But I do remember you because I remember you as you are right now. And, you know, these kids grow up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Yep. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely, let's step over the spoiler line.
Yes.
Yeah.
we've skirted close to it.
Right. Yeah. Let's do that.
Okay.
But yeah, so I liked, you know, at the very beginning, you know, we're kind of pretty far down his life and he's clearly beloved at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And, but he can't come for the first time. And I can't remember how many years he couldn't be there on opening day because he had a cold and, you know, but just the way everybody spoke about him was
yes.
really glowing. You know, it was like, this is an important person at this school and for all the right reasons, you know, it just seemed like we were shown someone who had been in his career for a long time and had been successful and the kids liked him and, he could teach, you know, it was really great, you know, and then
the fellow teachers loved him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, he was friends with everybody and clearly had succeeded. And then we go back to when he first arrived. And like you said, you kind of described this encounter. He gets on the train and it was pretty clear he kind of didn't know what to do. It was like I said, you know, get in that room with all those kids, right? So he's riding the train in this room on the train and kids are all around just being boys, and there's one
being boys.
Yeah, and there's one who is just extremely shy, but Mr. Chipping looked lost to me, like mm-hmm. I really just don't know how to act. I don't know how to relate. And even this shy boy, you know, he tried to connect with this shy boy, and the boy wasn't gonna have that. He was just just couldn't do it.
Right.
So, but he had, you know, so he had to been feeling like, you know, what have I done here? I don't know how to do this. And then after that, you know, he is made fun of in his first class.
Yes, they just are awful to him.
Really awful.
And basically, he fails the test in that sense.
Right.
they are just schooling him. I mean, when the headmaster or the head of the school walks by and hears all the commotion, I mean, he's in complete disarray. I mean, his clothes have been tugged on. And I mean, just those boys.
Yeah, he just lost control of the whole class and walked I think it was the headmaster walked in and, you know, said, you know, what is going on here? And, you know, all you boys, you need to show up for a switching at my house.
Yeah, I'm going to cane all of you.
All of you, yeah. And it was amazing. And then after that, I mean, I felt horrible because he set out some punishment, which coincided with a cricket game that was incredibly important to the school. And he said, well, I can't go back on my word, so therefore I have to follow through with this punishment. And he had a room full of boys writing in notebooks while this cricket game was going on, and they lost it.
And one of them, one of the best players.
Yeah,
So it was just awful.
Oh, it was awful.
Well, and also because he really was groping for how do I find my way, and the night before the headmaster had said, look, maybe this isn't the right job for you. And he goes, oh, no, I really want to do it. I really want, I just, give me a chance. And I thought, well, both, that seems like hasty judgment on the headmaster's part. But also I loved his longing to do it, even though he didn't know how. And the headmaster says, okay, but you've got to have discipline. And so that was clearly the one piece of guidance he'd received. And so he did it. And unfortunately, he didn't have any other endearing qualities to go along with it.
Yeah.
No. So they might respect him, they might fear him, but they didn't like him.
Yeah, he even said, you know, I think I've lost some friendship today. And oh, it was rough.
Yeah, and they're giving him these looks. Yeah, and he was right.
He was right. And can you imagine, I mean, those boys had never forgotten that. Never.
No, and because really, if I'm thinking right, the next time we really see him, everybody's breaking up to go to Christmas. And this is several years later. I mean, because he keeps saying he's middle-aged, but I don't know what that means. Yeah. But it's definitely been like 15 years or something, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
He's been there a fairly long time. And the kids are clustered around the other teachers talking animatedly about their plans for Christmas and this and that. And the teachers are all very nice to him. They like him well enough, but they're talking about their plans to do stuff. And they says, oh, well, he's going to go to Harrowby or whatever it is, the place he always goes. And he's hoping he's going to get named housemaster. I guess you get a house and you watch over the boys because they're boarding there and everything. And this is going to be the opening at the right time. It's going to be a huge promotion. And they say, you know, you get such good work out of the boys in Latin, which is his specialty. And it's like, oh, crap, I see how it is. Nobody likes you and they know it. So you won't be good at controlling them. And you're getting great work out of them because they're kind of afraid of you, too. And he doesn't act mean.
Yeah.
But he's probably stern.
Yeah, it's like he's missing a piece, right?
And then there's that really friendly German teacher.
Yes.
Who's Austrian, but he teaches German. He says, I'm going to go walking in, where is it?
Yeah, somewhere. I can't remember. Somewhere.
Somewhere in Germany.
Yeah, somewhere in German, right?
Austria or where they wear like
the shorts with the suspenders or whatever you call that stuff.
Yes, of course. Have you not been mountain climbing, Scott?
Of course, that's what you wear.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he won't take no for an answer, and he just kind of drags them on this trip with them.
Yeah.
And that changed his
life.
Everything.
Changed his life.
Yeah, for one thing, I don't know if he'd ever had anybody act that friendly to him. Like, no, I'm determined. I'm going to make you feel better, because he knew how upset he was over losing that job, posting.
And the acting was great there too. I mean, he's standing there by himself, almost in turmoil over the invitation. He's like, you know, how can I get out of this? I mean, that's what I felt like he was. He was thinking, you know, it's like, I just do not want to do this. How do I? Oh boy, you know.
Yeah.
And then he goes and opens up. Yep.
Yes.
Meets the right person. Yeah.
Tell about it.
So that was fun. So he's in a, he's on a mountain trail and it's misty and he hears somebody, a woman, yelling.
Just hello.
Hello. Yes. So he starts yelling back, you know, cups his mouth and, you know, hello. And are you okay? And there's no answer. So he's feels like he needs to go check this out. So up he goes in the mist up this, what I think is a trail.
Mm-hmm. But it's a really rugged trail. At one point, there's a cross in memoriam of somebody who died there falling off the edge of the mountain, I assume, because there's hardly anything there. And then he goes, oh, I'll go on, you know, and he's climbing up these little carved in steps in the side of the mountain. I'm just like, there's nothing to even hold on to.
Yep. But he's like, somebody's in trouble, you know, is what he thinks. Somebody might be in trouble. So at the end of that trail is the lovely Greer Garson.
Yes.
Catherine.
Yes.
And they meet and they talk and she's a little forward. It was really, we call that a meet cute, right?
Yes. Well, and she's very much the kind of a modern woman because she says she's going through Germany on a bicycle tour with a friend of hers. And he says, those new machines. Oh my goodness. I've heard that, you know, go like an incredible amount. I've almost gotten run over them. It was at 5 miles an hour or something. Oh, you know, and she's up there climbing by herself. I love her giving him sandwiches out of her bag. I've got loads and loads of them, and they're holding these teeny little sandwiches in their hands. And I'm thinking, once again, I'm reminded our servings of everything are too big.
Yeah.
anyway.
Yes.
Anyway, continue.
Yeah. And then the jacket, you know, he takes his jacket off and offers it to her. And she's like, well, we'll both fit in this jacket. And I was like, well, you go, Mr. Chips.
It's cool for both of us.
Yeah,
I know. It was nice. She's so good, too, because she says, well, bro, you were very brave to come up here.
Mm.
Because he says, well, I feel kind of stupid now that, doesn't he? Now that I know that you weren't really in trouble and everything. Now I just am inserting myself where I don't need to be because he's being shy again.
Yeah.
She says, no, I don't think so. It's nice to have somebody with me up here because it's so foggy we can't see.
Yeah, that was great. Mm-hmm. And then, so then they come down off the mountain and they bump into each other again. And
And there's a party at the hotel, in the little hotel restaurant.
Yes.
For everybody, because everybody was worried sick about those two. They were both inexperienced climbers and the fog came down on the mountain. And they said, well, if they just stay where they are, they'll be all right. But we don't know that they'll know to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's happy they're back. And I mean, as soon as the first toast is offered, Mr. Chipping says, well, okay, thank you, goodbye, I'm going to bed. And the party goes on, and he's sitting on his patio, or his balcony porch, I guess, really, and there's greenery between them, so the people on the next balcony can't see him, and it's her, it's Catherine. Mm-hmm. And she comes out, and she's talking to her friend who's inside. And the friend says, you know, it's so strange that he left. And she says, well, I just think he's shy.
Mm.
And she goes, well, and I don't think he was that good looking or something. She says, well, I think he was pretty good looking. And so he's listening to this kind of going, oh, this is so nice, you know.
Mm.
And I loved the thing she said when she said, he's quite charming. He's just shy. And then she says, I'm sorry for shy people. They must be awfully lonely sometimes. And she's expressing just what he is, but he could never articulate in that same way.
Right.
She understands him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And then, there's just a lot of really nice romantic moments. Like, they're talking to each other, you know, what are you going to remember from this trip?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
that's when they're in the dance hall.
Yes.
Or ballroom, when they're in the dance
hall, yeah. And she says, well, I know what you're going to remember.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, this is great. You know, and she says, you're going to remember the time that you danced this waltz. And he's like, but I haven't done that. And she says, well, let's go.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then she says, well, if you don't want to, that's okay. But she's looking over and she so clearly would love to dance.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't done this since high school or whatever. So he he does her. He does the dance and everything. And she's going, now reverse. He's like, reverse. She goes, go the other direction. Twirl the other way. Because they're waltzing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just beautiful because she's not pushing him, but he really likes her, of course. Mm. And he wants to make her happy. So he will dance for her without her pushing him to it. And without her even
And he
begging.
Loves it. He enjoyed the heck out of it. And that is like the vision of marriage, right? Where it's like she was a piece that he missed or he was missing, and together made him greater. Mm-hmm. it turned something on in him that wasn't turned on, you know? Ability that, you know, she showed him how. And she was just so natural. And we see that later with the boys, but I don't want to get yet. But
she was so clearly attracted to him. And I love the little story about the German friend Max says they're looking, because they've been trailing the bicycles, but haven't been able to catch up. But he's looking for her the whole time because he got up and they'd already left. He's like, oh no, you know. Yeah. And Max knows this, even though it's not said. He's got this great smile. He's like, oh, here's two bicycles. Let's look, you know. And they finally catch, but right before they catch up, he says, well, do you know the rumor about, or the little fable about the Blue Danube? Because Max looks and says, why do they call it blue? Because it's brown and muddy. And he goes, oh no, if you look at it and you're in love, it looks blue. And he goes, does it look blue to you, Chipping? He doesn't answer. Mm-hmm. And then you see the two, the Catherine and her friend, and the friend saying the same thing. I don't know why they call it blue. It's brown. And she looks down and she goes, well, of course it's blue. So we know.
Yes. Yeah.
She's in love too.
That's nice. Yeah.
And it's not like she's the juggernaut behind all their activity. She just fills in and is so, as you say, she's so naturally charming and interested in people, but she's never pushy about it.
Hmm.
But she kind of, as we see them as a married couple, and he gets to be a housemaster and she's giving tea parties for the boys and everything, he sees how she handles them.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not even handling them. She's just being charming to them and giving them plenty of tea and cake and everything.
Yeah.
And but it's a little bit of joking. It's a little bit of understanding who each of them is and how they work together as a group.
Mm-hmm.
And he then starts doing a little joking of his own. And she would say things like, you tell that joke that you tell in Latin class that you've told me, the one you keep in your head that you won't tell them. And he goes, oh, I couldn't do that. She's like, no, you do it. So that, it's like you're saying, that stuff's there the whole time. He's made these little jokes based on Latin and English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when he does it, there's this dead silence and he's like, oh no, it's really a bomb. And then suddenly they get it and they just roar with laughter. And
that was a good scene. Yeah.
Right. And just him doing that based on her just saying that helps him learn how to take a risk and put himself out there a little bit.
Yeah.
And she never said, did you do it? What happened? Or pushed him or anything. She just kind of dropped the idea. And because he loves her and trusts her, he thought about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really liked that. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it too. It's just it's a wonderful model. And this two people like puzzle pieces, you know, making the complete whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was beautiful. I really liked it.
Well, yeah, and it's the middle of the movie because it's the turning point for him, and it's also just shows what this movie does that I love is it basically celebrates the virtues of the shy person who just needs a little encouragement to bloom. You know, there are not many movies, I think, about shy people that don't just dwell on the angst of being shy or, oh, well, now it's not fair. Nobody ever looks at you. this is just how it is. He's just going along. And he never is not kind of a little shy. He's better about it.
Yeah.
He's always kind of quiet and waiting for the moment to say his little thing. And I like that. I'm not like that.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be shy.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. But now I'm kind of the louder person, but I loved Mr. Chips and how it just showed he was the same person, but fully realized, as you said.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And, I mean, we see that in so many ways. He just blossoms and, becomes that, now we see that guy we saw at the very beginning.
Yeah.
We see that person and now we understand, that he's complete now and the kids love him and he's so effective as a teacher and gets the job as the headmaster of a house or, gets all of that. All the stuff that was being denied him because he was kind of incomplete, I guess. And it was beautiful, just like
only
you said.
One side of himself was being expressed, and that was the side that was he was trying to do the right thing, but he didn't have the full meaning or heart behind it,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because then there's the heartbreaking part where his wife dies in childbirth.
Uh-huh.
That happened, and I was like, "What?"
Yeah, that was just devastating.
That also was not the movie I was promised by that point.
Yes.
I was expecting
and that
more.
That was an interesting thing, too. So
mm-hmm.
It was like that happened, and it was horrible.
Oh, it was awful.
And yet he kept going.
Well, and you saw how the boys had changed and liked him, because in some ways it was a mirror of his first day with them, right?
Yeah.
Except they're fondly planning April Fool's Day's jokes on him because it is April Fool's Day, which is makes it even worse when mm-hmm. she dies and the baby dies with her and everything. So all we see is him coming down just kind of like sleepwalking.
Yeah.
He just can't even take it in. And they said, well, we're going to get people to take your classes. He's like, no, I'll just go. And he does. But again, he's just in a different world. He's just sleepwalking. And the boys have been laughing because they planned this trick. And you think about it, and you think, the first day, they were also joking, but because they didn't have that affection, it went way too far too fast.
Wow, yeah.
This time, they're looking at it, and they're kind of laughing, and he's opening these letters and kind of bewildered by it. And then some kid comes in who's heard the news, and it gets whispered through the room, and they're suddenly just silent and sad.
Mm.
And he says, okay, so go ahead and open up whatever and start reading the Latin from this. And you can see they're just fighting back tears. They love him so much.
Yeah.
And her, of course, they would have loved her a lot, too.
Yeah, very much.
And the whole situation. And so it's that this shows us how he has grown and how the change in who he has become has changed the attitude of the class to him.
Right, right.
Because this would have been, many years later from when he was first there.
Yeah. And then once we get past that, he continues, he hasn't, that part that she brought him did not die.
Yeah.
It stayed there, and that this perseverance through tragedy and suffering. It was an incredible vision of that.
Which I have to give them credit, they don't really show us that either.
Right, yeah. And
we see him suffering, and then we see many years later again.
Mm-hmm.
So we're allowed to just kind of jump to here he still is. He's become more jokey, his gentle jokes, And she had called him Chips, so that's where he becomes Mr. Chips to everyone.
Right. Yeah, it was her who brought that.
Mm-hmm.
Her little nickname. And that stayed with him, too. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's just, it's amazing. What an incredible thing to go through. But it's just a way to show it. You can make it,
Mm-hmm.
It's inspiring.
Well, you never forget. but time softens things.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and I prefer that to now where we would have had, maybe they would have said goodbye to each other. It would have been more like Gone with the Wind where everybody's going in to say goodbye to Melanie. You know, you're crying along with them and everything. And it's okay for that movie. That's a different movie. But this one was not about that. And it was telling us what the wife did, but just as a part of his whole lived life. Because, as you say, he has to go on and live it. And so he takes forward that part, and it becomes more of him.
Mm-hmm.
The joking, the affection for the boys, the kind of tolerance. And he's talking to somebody, and I'm trying to remember. It's when he's talking to the new headmaster, who's younger, and wants to make this a modern school.
Hmm.
And teach them how to be productive.
Teach them how to pronounce Latin incorrectly.
Yes, teach them how to pronounce it. Cicero instead of Cicero. Yeah. And he says, you're not pronouncing it right. You're old. He says, well, that's all right to be old. Tradition's good. And he says, well, we're going to raise boys to do this. And this is going to make them go on in the world and be productive and all this. And he says, give a boy a sense of humor and a sense of proportion, and he can face anything. And see, this is the summary of what his wife did for him.
Yes. Nice. Yeah. Love that connection. I didn't make that, but there it is.
Well, I've seen it twice, so I have the advantage.
There it is. That's really great.
Yeah.
Yep. That's good. Yeah, he's just relaying what got him through, right? Very good.
Yeah, and I also like that we're shown later the fact that even though the kids are fond of him, and he is not a strict disciplinarian as far as we can tell. He's relying on the proportion, the humor, all the other things. He can be a disciplinarian when he needs to. And so it's World War I. One boy in particular has joined up, and as soon as he's graduated, he's going to leave and go off to be in the army. And he's being really insolent to some of the teachers there and insulting about the fact that they're not signed up for the war. They're cowards.
Yeah.
And so we see him coming to Mr. Chip's office.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Chip says, he's like, well, they haven't signed up or anything. He goes, well, we're going to talk about that. But first you get your caning. Bend over that chair, sir.
Yes.
And they just show it as a shadow, but you can hear the whip of the cane, and you're just like, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not extreme, but it's not just a couple of licks either.
Yeah.
And so then he sits down and says, now you'd like this soft chair, I'm sure. And the kid's like, I'm not going to cry, but it did hurt. And then he says, now, let's talk about the things you were saying. And he says, the reason I'm the headmaster is, and I'm so old, is the real headmaster has gone off to fight. We don't accept a single teacher at this school unless they've been rejected for the army already.
Mm.
This guy's got asthma. This guy can't do this. This guy tried and, you know, whatever. And the student was looking more and more shamefaced.
So as he should, yes.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But, and he says, oh, I didn't know. And he says, you know, and if you weren't a good person, a good kid, basically, I wouldn't have told you.
Mm.
But this is the kind of thing you need to know, because you're going to have men under your orders, and you need to keep all these kinds of things in mind.
Yes.
So he's disciplining him. He actually, you know, canes him.
Mm-hmm.
So but the kid accepts it. And the kid learns from him. He's able to teach him, here's a different way to be.
Yes.
And it's so different, again, from the first time we saw him with that bunch of kids. Or even the shy kid.
Yeah, agreed.
He couldn't talk to very well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really nice contrast there. It's like,
one-on-one.
You have one-on-one there, and you had one-on-one at the beginning. And then, like you said, you had his first class and the class when his wife died. And then you have the class that he led while the bombing was happening.
Yes, talk about that. That was wonderful.
So they're in I don't know, some big hall or something, and he's got all the kids
there. They've gone
there.
Downstairs into the basement.
Okay.
The air raid things have gone on.
Yeah.
And so they're down in the basement.
Right. So he leads the class from down there, and the bombs are just going off too near them, and, you know, you can hear airplanes, and, yeah, it was crazy. And yet he sat there and was the calm leader that they needed. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just calm, collected. You know, just silently saying, we're going to get through this, everybody, and we're just going to continue on. And I recall him asking someone to read who had, you know, stood up, and then a bomb hits. And, mm-hmm. you know, as the sound dwindles, you know, he just nods at the kid and says, go ahead. Yeah, it was an incredible scene. What did you notice in it?
The thing that he had picked out for him to read, too, was something about, I wish I could remember it, but it was like the Germans always like to attack when, you know, uncertain or something. He goes, mm-hmm. and we see ancient history can sometimes be very informative in modern times. And they just die laughing.
That is right.
They're just cracking up.
Mm-hmm.
And so he also makes them, takes their mind off of the trouble.
Yeah, right.
And he
using
knows
humor
the book
again.
So well.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, let's get their minds off it. They have to think about their Latin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that. It's just something that's here.
Yeah.
But yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's come a very long way.
Mm-hmm.
A very long way. And it's just really great how this movie achieves that. I mean, the actor is great, like we said, but the script was terrific.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And the directing,
yeah.
I guess, well, Sam Wood was nominated for Goodbye, Mr. Chip, so he must have been the main director.
Okay, yeah.
For
Very
it.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we have, after, you know, his stint as headmaster, because he had actually retired and then come out of retirement to be the headmaster during the war, and then he's retired again, and now he's at the end of his life, and one of the things he talks about is... there's someone having a conversation and they were pitying him. And he said, I thought I heard you say pity, but a pity that I'd never had any children. And then he says, but you're wrong because I've had thousands of children and all of them boys.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great, you know? So it was like, yeah, talk about a vocation there, right? It's like
right,
he had
and
found
it's
his.
Showing mm-hmm. his memory of all these lines and lines of boys coming through and saying their name kind of superimposed on each other.
Yeah.
And you realize we all know the importance of a teacher, but this also shows it in these small ways, you know, because one of the last times we see him really interacting with people is the whichever Collie it is, Peter Collie, I guess, who's going off to World War One with this guy as his Batman, which is like your servant or, you know, he's like your aide or something.
Right.
And so, but earlier we had seen when they were kids, they were having a big fight because the kid from the school called the other one who's the grocer's boy, the town cheese.
Yep.
And he had called him a little snob or something. And then they just started fighting. And Mr. Chips breaks it up and he says, well, first of all, Collie, I've told you, always keep your left up or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I tell you, never do that. And then he turns around and says, now, who are you? You must be the greengrocer boy. So they start talking about all this. And he says, you know, you guys really need to learn to respect each other more. You've each got things going on. And so it's nice then you see before Peter Collie's going off to war, he's asking Mr. Chips to look in on his wife and baby while he's gone. And he goes out to say goodbye. And here's the greengrocer guy who's the Batman for him.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously were good friends. And in fact, they died together, as it turns out.
Wow. Yeah.
Collie was going to rescue him, and they both were killed.
Mm.
So,
yeah, amazing. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so good. Yep. Yeah, the whole movie, this whole journey, This man's journey was just inspiring as heck. That's all I can say. I when it was done, I was like, yeah, I want to inspire people like he did, you know. Yeah. It's very uplifting.
Well, that's it. And it's, like I say, I really loved the idea that this very shy man found his vocation and had a very satisfying life and made such a big difference by being himself and doing what he did really well. And without having others aggrandize him or, you know, there was a big award ceremony when he retires and everybody loves him and everything. But this is the difference that an ordinary life can make. Mm. And like you say, that's exactly the point of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And this is told more quietly than that because it's in one setting with one person essentially at the center of it. But yeah. it's really beautiful.
It is.
It's charming. I mean, the whole movie is kind of a reflection of what he's like. You know, when Catherine says, he's quite charming, he's just shy. And the whole movie is quite charming.
And a little shy.
Yeah, and a little shy.
That's really good. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that so much. So what did you say? It was a little humor and what else?
And a sense of perspective.
And a sense
of proportion. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Little boy, a sense of humor and a sense of proportion. And, you know, we'd all be better off if we could remember that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yep. A sense of proportion, meaning some problems are not as big as others.
Well, and maybe I would say from the point of view of the shy person, everything's not always about you in the sense of, you know, you're retiring and shy and worried about what people will think and how you're going to do.
And anxious, right?
Yeah. So maybe take yourself a little more lightly. And that's part of the sense of humor also. Yeah.
I saw something online the other day. It was like, I need to tell my brain that trying to line up my tires at the car wash and being attacked by a lion are two different levels of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's like, some of us are wired that anxious way but.
Well, yeah. And I'm trying to remember if I just, this must be something somebody said, but exercising authority is not the same thing as exerting discipline.
Mm, I like that.
And he was trying to exert discipline at the beginning in order to get authority. And later, of course, he had the authority and was still much loved.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Very. I love that very much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have to earn that respect. And people need to know that you care about them.
Yeah, you know, and you have to also not take yourself too seriously.
Yeah, that's important as heck. Very important.
And these days, everybody's got such a thin skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. It comes from, when you said let people know you care about them, it comes from thinking more about the other person than you're thinking about yourself.
Yeah, well, that's what love is, right?
Well,
willing the good of the other person.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's what we're called to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when we're so self-conscious, it's hard to remember that.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's got to be kind of remembered.
Yeah.
So we could kind of work on it if that's our thing.
Yeah, exactly. And Mr. Chips displayed that throughout, you know, even at the beginning when he was struggling with how to do that. I mean, it was in him.
Mm-hmm.
But he just needed to figure out how to express it.
Yeah.
And that's what his wife showed him. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also probably having a friend like Max.
Yes. Yeah.
Who he would make little hints about, you know, how Mr. Chips was attracted to Catherine, but he didn't really bug him about it. He'd just go, look for the bicycles and have a big smile. Or says, does the Danube look blue to you? You know, that kind of thing. And then when he shouts, when she kisses him before she gets on the train, he goes, well, now we have to get married as he's running along. She goes, yes, let's. Oh, will you? Yes. Okay. And then he tells Max, I think we're going to get married. And he says, Are you kidding? This is written all over both your faces. Her friend already has the church picked out on the weekend, too. You know?
Yeah, yeah. That was the craziest marriage proposal ever, or agreement to marry, I guess is what it was.
You know, running down the railroad tracks. She was just dying for it, yeah. And she knew he'd never get it out otherwise, I think. I mean, you don't see that. She's just in the moment also, but
yeah. You're
like, it had to happen like that, because all the things that forced them together are those little things of just being in life, right?
Right.
Being on the mountain at the right time, you know, being at the dance, running into them off the boat, all those little things, because it had to be spontaneous.
Right.
Just reactions in the moment. And I think the reason she thinks Mr. Chips is charming is because he's mad because she didn't need saving on the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Or not mad, but just kind of chagrined.
Yeah.
And that she's like, well, you didn't need to save me. I didn't say I needed saving. And she wasn't being mean. She's just surprised, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, then I came all the way up here, blah, 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 blah. You know, and he also is just being kind of gentle about it, but he's being himself.
Mm.
And we don't see him doing that a lot verbally.
Right.
But she got to see it.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, and I liked, he gave a little speech that I noted about, I think it was to the headmaster who was trying to tell him that he's old-fashioned.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you know, I know the world's changing, Dr. Ralston. I've seen the old traditions die one by one. Grace, dignity, feeling for the past. And then he says, all that matters here today is a fat banking account. You're trying to run the school like a factory. For turning out money-making, machine-made snobs. I mean, you could write that line today. If I was writing a script, I could write that line.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this was 1939. So, yeah, coming out of the 20s into the 30s. Yeah, interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the Depression had happened.
Right.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. Modern methods, intensive training, or poppycock.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. I'm not going to retire. He says.
But he tells his, is it the other teachers or is it just his friend Max? I can't remember now. That, so what are you going to do? And he says, I think we can both have our way.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, oh, do you think he'll go for it? And he says, I think I can make him do it.
Mm.
And he just has this little smile. And then we see, and it's like 5 years later, maybe, not that long, when they're having the goodbye dinner for him to retire.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and he says, thank goodness he didn't take me up on my suggestion until now to retire.
Right.
So it's because he taught me so much
that I
needed to know.
Yeah.
Says the headmaster. Yeah.
That's great. Yep. He opened him up too.
Exactly. Because he was doing the same thing. He had his idea. He was going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed to see a sense of proportion about what he was doing.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a beautiful movie. Thank you so much for this movie.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. I have to say, this is something that watching these Oscars has really been good about. It's not every single year that we've done it that this has happened, but quite often there will be a movie that we put off until the very end of all of them because we're just like, I really don't want to watch this one.
Yeah.
And we'll be surprised that it's a really fine film.
That's
great.
And
we'll all remember it very fondly.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm.
So
I love it. And what year are y'all up to now?
Right now, let's see, I'm just going to look. We're on year 1941. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
So we're just a year later, but we're almost done with them. So 1941, Rebecca won, and that was directed by Hitchcock.
Nice.
Who also directed Foreign Correspondent, which was nominated.
Really?
Grapes of Wrath.
Two at once.
I know, right? Yeah. And they're both real different, of course. Rebecca was much the better than Foreign Correspondent.
But, okay, very good.
Grapes of Wrath.
I was wondering how you liked that one. Did you watch it?
We just watched it.
With Henry Fonda,
I thought it would be.
Was it Henry Fonda? Yep.
Yes, it's the one that I was like, we kind of know the story already. And it's like, but this is Henry Fonda's big movie. He really catapulted him into the public eye, I think. And we'll watch it. And it was very depressing, just like you thought it would
be. It's a very depressing book. Yeah, I don't think I've seen the movie. The book I liked, but it's depressing. There's just no doubt about that.
It made me really glad that you had us read East of Eden, which Steinbeck said all his other books were just practices and pieces ready. Of that. Yep, you know, yeah, exactly. And Grapes of Wrath, it was a really well done movie. I did not care for it, but it's because I don't like that kind of story.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I will say, and once again, here's the surprise, the woman who played the mother was astoundingly good.
Oh, cool.
She made the movie. I think Jane Driscoll, was that her name? Well, it doesn't matter. But if you look her up, and she was, I think she won Best Supporting Actress for her part, and she should have. And she was saying that she'd played so many mothers and nurses and teachers, because she just had those kind of looks, you know. She looked like a mother who raised a bunch of kids in the country, and she said she'd been in so many movies with Henry Fonda as his mother that when they'd show up on a set, he called her Ma and she called him son. It didn't matter what parts they were playing.
Oh, that's good.
But yeah, so and also, like I said, you get so many kinds of movies put together. So we have one left to watch, and then we'll move on to 1942. But so we watched The Great Dictator, that Charlie Chaplin movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where, yeah, he's part of the time he's the great dictator who looks just like Hitler, and part of the time he's his lookalike. He's a humble barber. Kitty Foyle, which is a serious role for Ginger Rogers. The Long Voyage Home, which was John Ford. And it was based on four Eugene O'Neill one-act plays about men at sea.
Wow.
And he put them all together, and one of the people in it was, of course, John Wayne, but he wasn't the main one. There were two other actors who were amazing in their parts.
Huh.
And now we didn't watch the ones that we'd either seen or knew so well. So The Philadelphia Story, Our Town, which I'm sorry, nothing's going to make me watch that. I've seen it.
Yeah, gotcha.
And The Letter by Betty Davis, which I'd had to watch twice for doing movies nights. And then we watched it once with my mother. And I'm like, it was a fine movie, but I don't need to see it a fourth time.
Right, right.
Yeah, so then we're going to watch all this in Heaven 2, which is a Betty Davis movie set in France.
Wow, it's amazing. I was like, Betty Davis is in like three of these movies. And
oh my gosh.
Hitchcock directed two of them. They were just cruising through these movies.
Oh yeah, and at the beginning of when we were watching, in the 1930s, there was one year when Claudette Colbert was in six movies. I mean, it's like she was a Bollywood star, and three of them were nominated for Oscars.
Holy smokes, yeah.
And watching her in all three of them was really interesting. She was good in all of them. Wow. She was Cleopatra. She was It Happened One Night, the rich girl running away. I mean, she was literally Cleopatra. I mean, it's amazing the things you find. And just because, you know, they're also better entertainment than you think. You think of these really old movies like this.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I'm looking forward to whatever else you find. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever you find that ends up on our schedule. That's exciting. I need to come up with something to do to mine for more movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Pick a director.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Pick someone like Howard Hawks, who did so many different kinds of movies. He's somebody I'd like to do. William Wyler will surprise you too.
Cool.
Because he was a studio guy, and he just did all kinds of movies, including Ben-Hur. You know, he directed Ben-Hur, the one we watched.
Yep, it is.
Yeah. And so when you do, then you start looking at them, and you go, this is the third movie of his I've seen where somebody has a conversation while they're on a big staircase. And you look him up, and you go, oh, here's his thing, framing people through windows, big staircases. And so then it starts to become kind of fun to look and see the different ways he uses these devices and how effective they are.
Yeah, that's cool.
So anyway, just
I love it.
Yeah. My recommendation to everyone.
That's great fun.
Yeah.
Great fun. Great fun. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, what's next up for us?
I guess it's your turn now.
It is. Science fiction time, but by Cy Kellett. Catholic science fiction. Maybe it's called Ad Limina by Cy Kellett. And Ad Limina, you know, if you are a bishop, you're supposed to go visit the Pope on an Ad Limina visit every so often. But when you live on Mars, it's kind of hard to get there.
Yeah, I read this book after we had him as a guest. I really enjoyed it a lot.
I did too. I enjoy it quite a bit. I hope he writes some more science fiction.
I wish he would. You need to write to him and tell him.
Maybe I'll do that after our episode. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
But I'm looking forward to talking about that. It's going to be great fun. All right.
I have very fond memories of that book. So
good. Very fun. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, I guess we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Yep, we'll be back.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care, bye-bye.